Guardian Unlimited.
Hello and welcome to our first Tech Weekly podcast for 2008. This year, we resolved to bring you the latest announcements, the biggest names, and the hottest controversies to grace the internet, technology, and beyond. I'm Alex Kratosky, and here in the studio are the effervescent Jemima Kish and the evanescent Charles Arthur. Welcome to you both. Welcome back for 2008. Did you guys manage to bag anything shiny for your festive period?
A cold.
Oh, that doesn't sound... Well, that does actually sound quite shiny.
Yeah, the shiniest thing I got was a pre-owned copy of Tiger Woods for the Wii, which I've not managed to play yet.
No shininess here in the studio. I don't think I got anything shiny either.
I don't think I got any gadgets at all. But I bought my brother a laser keyboard projection thingy.
Oh, ooh.
I thought that was quite cool.
That does sound quite cool.
You hoped he burned his fingers off.
Well, it's for his PlayStation, okay. I think.
Yeah. Well, anyway, drawing us back, this week's episode is chocker with news from the Consumer Electronics Show, currently underway in fabulous Las Vegas. Our man on the scene is Bobby Johnson. Hey, Bobby, how you doing? What's in store for us today?
Well, I've managed to rip myself away from gambling, all my worldly profits away, and I'm starting to have a look around the show floor. It's pretty interesting. It's huge as usual, and you know, everything's about being bigger and better than we saw last year.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to seeing the bigger and the better, and more to come very shortly from the Bobmeister. Also in today's podcast, we discuss the utility of the internet with author Nick Carr. We debate the world's worst PC applications, and we cover the latest and greatest news on the web, in the world, and on the blogs. First up, I hear Bill Gates is getting starry-eyed over on the Miracle Mile in Vegas.
Hello, Bill. Bill, I'm a little busy here. Bill, we've talked about this before. We're full up in the van.
Bill.
All positions are filled.
I know,
but I can't just replace Edge because you got a high score on Guitar Hero, Bill.
Look, I mean, Bill's always had a passion for music, and as long as it's not my music, I'm fine with that.
Yes, that was Bill Gates and Bono doing a tragic, tragic pre-scripted something or other. It's absolutely awful. Bobby, what else is going on at CES?
Well, that was Bill opening the show with his kind of traditional keynote. It was pretty stuffed full of celebrity appearances, because it's his last speech to the conference before he steps down from his activities at Microsoft. So, you know, we saw Hillary Clinton and George Clooney, Steven Spielberg all rolled up. You know, it was kind of it was him showing off a bit, really. But elsewhere in the show, what we're really seeing is the continuing theme of converging devices, so things that bring lots of different functions together. And that's something that Gates himself explained during his talk.
Yeah, it does seem, Bobby, that the buzz is convergence this year. I'm wondering, have we stepped back in time, or is there something new out there that Bill's picking up on?
This was kind of a disappointing talk in as much as anyone who saw him speak last year at the same event basically got more of the same. He did pretty much the same demos. He talked about how, you know, phones and TVs and games consoles are all coming together in this one big pile. And I'm really, you know, nothing new, but a closer, tighter vision of what the future might hold.
The second digital decade will be more focused on connecting people. It'll be more focused on being user-centric. Microsoft will deliver platforms that will let people build applications. When we talk about services, we mean a huge variety of things and things yet to be invented. The mapping services, the payment services, the friends lists and storage that you can have in a very effective way up in the cloud itself.
We've heard all this stuff before, we're seeing it happen. Don't forget as well that when Americans talk about mobile, for example, they're talking from a kind of disadvantaged position, so that what they think is shiny and new isn't necessarily what we get excited about. But there were a few things where he was kind of trying to push forward a little bit. He talked a lot about the way we interact with the devices, and maybe that, you know, the the writing was on the wall for the traditional kind of keyboard and mouse experience. And he even at one point mentioned the iPhone, which kind of, you know, drew a slight gasp from a few people in the audience who were surprised whenever they hear him mention Apple.
The first digital decade was largely driven by the keyboard and the mouse. Yes, in the last 2 years, we've started to see the emergence of other modes of interaction. Touch on Windows PC, touch on the iPhone, the Surface device that we're talking about. We started to see speech, the Tell Me capability built into the phone, the Ford Sync, where you get to talk and interact with your media or your phone capabilities. The reaction to those natural interface implementations has been very dramatic. People are very interested in a simpler way of navigating the information.
So, Bobby, Bill has frequently done these predictions, and he often misreads his crystal ball. How many of these do you think are actually going to come to pass in the future?
Well, I think really, I mean, these are all bankers, to be honest. He's, you know, his predictions are usually relatively accurate, but may not always pan out as quickly as possible. But, you know, let's give the guy some credit. He kind of saw a few things happen down the line that the rest of us weren't necessarily as enthusiastic about. Of course, yeah, there are a few duds out there. Microsoft Bob predicting that spam would be a thing of the past by 2006.
That's
not really happened, does it?
The tablet. You know,
but his suggestion really that, you know, we're going to see more kind of usable interfaces is it's a done deal already, as far as I can tell.
Jemima, you've been keeping your ear to the ground on the CES front.
Yeah, I've been tracking a lot of blogs all day, and after the obvious intense excitement of Bill's speech, which was thrilling, there hasn't really been that much of a buzz on the blogs. There's nothing really thrilling. I don't know if you've heard anything about the Xbox, Bobby. Xbox users are going to have access to TV services provided by BT, I think.
Yeah, this is something we've kind of seen delivered to American users, but hasn't arrived for Brits yet. And it's all part of Microsoft's plan to to take on Apple in a kind of download to your TV stakes and use the Xbox to watch TV over the internet. And we also heard that they'd be delivering movies from MGM, so you know some pretty big titles there. So this was kind of new. Some of the other stuff that's going on, you know, there's a lot of gadget based stuff out there, but it's a lot of it's willy waving really. You got all of these electronics manufacturers who come together and say ours is bigger and better than yours. So you know we've got enormous TV screens, we've got
I wanted to ask you about actually, because there's a screen that gamers are going to love, which is just wider than a 30-inch screen, but it's curved.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, you need to go and find it.
I'm going to go out and have a look, because the floor's opening now as I speak, so we're all about to rush in and get our hands on all this stuff.
Well, there was just a note on CNET's blog which said they were very impressed by the level of immersion. So if you want to get really into your game, then that's the screen to go for, I think.
Immerse me.
Well, listen, we won't keep you any longer because obviously you need to clamber in and jump over the rest of the journalists to get your go in the curved screen. We look forward to speaking with you again next week. But in the meantime, listeners, we'd like to know what gadgets or rumors you would like Bobby to track down while he's at CES. Let him be your eyes, your hands, your feet. If there's anything that you would like him to investigate, he'll be there. He'll also be at Macworld next week for all of you Apple fanatics. Is there anywhere that you don't want to go, Bobby?
I don't want to go on the Stratosphere roller coaster. That's the only thing that I ask. God. I've got a terrible... Honestly, I'll poo my pants and nobody wants to see that.
No, well, you're over there, so it's fine. As long as you clean them before you come back to the studio, it's okay. Send your comments to tech@guardian.co.uk. That's tech, T-E-C-H, @guardian.co.uk, and let us know. We'll send Bobby in your stead. It's time now for the news. Jemima, what's happening in the world of technology this week?
Japanese electronic giant Toshiba may have been dealt a fatal blow in its attempt to win the battle for high-definition DVD. Several major movie studios are ditching Toshiba's HD DVD format. New Line Cinema has joined Warner Brothers in revealing that in the future it would only be supplying its movies in rival Blu-ray format. It's been available as a download for over 3 months, but chart recognition has finally arrived for In Rainbows as the CD version of Radiohead's latest album debuted at number one in this week's album charts. On its initial release in October, In Rainbows was famously only available as a pay-as-much-as-you-wish download or as part of a £40 box set sold straight from the band's website, disqualifying it from entering the charts. The band subsequently agreed a deal for a physical CD release through record label XL, which went on sale last week. Its sales success marks the fifth time Radiohead have reached the top of the album charts in the UK. In gaming news, the Xbox 360 Live's online network was down over the Christmas period, much to the dismay of millions of gamers. It's a backhand compliment to Microsoft, however, as the service recorded its largest sign-up ever and its greatest concurrency for a few seconds, that is. The good news for frustrated gamers is that Live registered members around the world will be getting a free, full live arcade game for their troubles. Full details on the games blog in the next few weeks. And social networking websites have become the hub for the UK's cultural underground, with a new generation turning to the likes of MySpace to make money, collaborate on creative projects and share ideas with their friends, according to a study. An extensive social networking research project commissioned by MySpace identified a host of emerging trends and tribes that the website says has previously gone undetected by the mainstream. Researchers from the Future Laboratory set up a virtual hide in MySpace over 6 weeks, interviewing 1,000 users who explained how they define themselves as part of groups including Mindy's, Chimo's, Slash Slash Kids and Rudettes.
My favourites are the Chimo's.
Yes, that's Chav. Chavs and emos.
That just seems
Chav
so
emos.
Wrong.
So what are all these different groups? I mean, they sound like sort of, you know, snacks
diseases.
Or something.
No, well, slash kids means when you sort of describe yourself, you put you're into design, slash fashion, slash music, slash whatever. So they're kids that like might be into DJing and make their own T-shirts. Mindy's are kind of straight edge indie kids. And I think it's quite interesting that it shows that MySpace goes far beyond the kind of the stereotype of what those networks are used for.
Giving sociologists something to do in the day?
Indeed.
Basically, yes.
Charles, let's take a quick step back. Does Warner's choice now indicate the end of HD DVD?
It's not completely dead. There's still two major studios, Paramount and Universal, who are going to keep on releasing exclusively on HD DVD, as will DreamWorks, which will have Shrek 3 coming out in that format, I guess. But Warner Brothers is going to be staying with both formats, that's HD DVD and Blu-ray, to the end of May, from the latest reports. But after that, it's just going to be Blu-ray, and that will be 70% of the market, which is Walt Disney, 20th Century Fox, MGM, Lionsgate, Warner, and of course Sony, all on the Sony Blu-ray side. That's really big, I think. It's unless something amazing happens with HD DVD, I think that it's out.
It's pretty incredible, actually, because that does seem like an about-face. All the coverage up to date seemed to be favouring the HD, and now it really seems the other way.
The thing was, and I think we discussed this in the previous podcast, was that it was all hanging on what Warner's decided to do. If it jumped to HD DVD, I think that could have swung it for HD DVD, to be honest. And whilst Warner sat on the fence, no one could call it. But with this move, that makes it look a lot more likely that Blu-ray is going to be the eventual winner.
Excellent. Well, thank you both very much.
I'm Alok Jha, and coming up on this week's brand new Science Weekly, it's a mix of philosophy, faith and science as we explore Edge Magazine's New Year question and hear how the likes of Richard Dawkins, Steven Pinker and Craig Venter admit to having had second thoughts on the doctrines they hold most dear. Plus, At Home with Hector, we pay a special visit to Britain's newest and fastest supercomputer. And we report from Virgin Galactic's European Mission Control and their planned trips to fly right into the Northern Lights. Think you've heard it all before? Well, think again. That's all on Science Weekly at guardian.co.uk/science/podcast.
How we think of computing is changing, unsurprisingly. Back in the day, we were isolated little islands with a computer each. Now, argues Nick Carr, author of The Big Switch, Rewiring the World from Edison to Google, we're one giant networked utility. What's his big idea here, Charles?
Well, Nick Carr is a former editor of the Harvard Technology Review. His previous book was called Does IT Matter, which really set the cat among the pigeons because it argued that companies didn't get any great competitive advantage from spending all their money on IT systems. Now what he's doing is he's looking at the way that Bill Gates even and everyone else is calling the cloud, where basically if you need a bit of computing power, you just open a browser window and bring up Google. It can do calculations for you and do a search. And he's looking at the way that computing is becoming, to us, the same way that electricity was back at the beginning of the 1900s. So when I spoke to him last week, when I had actually had a voice, I asked him, first of all, why he was comparing it to electricity.
I think electricity in computers or information technology are in some ways unique technologies because they have a whole lot of different applications in a way that, say, gas and water don't. All you need to do is look around your house at everything that runs on electricity. And now we see all those appliances as kind of separate products, but really they're essentially part of the electric system. And similarly with computers, we can use software and everything to do a whole lot of different things. And more than that, they're both supplied from central stations over a network, which makes them extremely unique, I think, among major technologies that we all share and use.
It's almost this, that famous saying that Thomas Watson of IBM had about computers, where he said, well, I think there might be a market for five of them. It's almost as if that has come true, isn't it? I mean, there's, in effect, there's five really, really big computers, so just sort of Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, and sort of a few public ones like Skype and BitTorrent.
You could go even further in saying that even those are merging together, in essence, because they can all share information with each other. So what we know is the World Wide Web is really turning into a worldwide computer, a single, in essence, giant computing machine that all of us can program to do whatever we want it to do.
Is the outcome always good?
No, I don't think the outcome is necessarily good. With electrification and industrialization in general, a lot of craft workers lost their jobs as industrial processes became automated, and yet there was this huge influx of new jobs, factory jobs or white-collar jobs to manage all the information. With computing, I think we're seeing the displacement of large numbers of jobs, but unlike with electricity and electrification, we don't see huge numbers of new jobs, good new jobs being created.
For the coming year, what sort of particular predictions do you think you would make about the effects of this? Because, I mean, you're talking there about a long-term trend.
Yeah, I mean, this is the type of technological change that progresses in historical terms quickly, but in human terms fairly slowly. I mean, it's going to play out over a number of years. But I think one of the things to look out for is the security of this online computing infrastructure, because it has a lot of vulnerabilities. And we see that, you know, in everything from spam to so-called botnets, which are these, you know, centrally controlled armies of zombie computers. And I don't think that politicians have really yet come to understand what's happening. In the way I explain it is that the internet, as it becomes this computing machine, is also becoming the kind of main economic or commercial infrastructure for countries. And it's a vulnerable infrastructure. And more than that, it's a very portable infrastructure. So you can have the data on which your country's economy relies, you know, running in computers anywhere in the world. And at some point, I think it's almost inevitable that there's going to be a big problem. And maybe it's, you know, a breakdown of the internet as it becomes overwhelmed with data, or maybe it's an attack for political or criminal purposes. But at some point, and it may unfortunately be sooner rather than later, there's going to be some kind of breakdown of the system, and the consequences could be, you know, fairly major.
Well, this sounds all a bit Die Hard, Charles, doesn't it? Die Hard. I just saw Die Hard yesterday, and it was brilliant. And it is all about, you know, some bad guys coming in and hacking the mainframe and taking everything down. Is this something that realistically could happen in the UK?
It's possible. I mean, it's very hard to put a figure onto these sorts of things, but one can see that the internet isn't that resilient. If you dropped a big enough bomb on a particular place in Docklands, then a lot of the internet infrastructure goes through there. And
always put the idea out there.
We're not suggesting anything. Not heard here obviously, on the Tech Weekly podcast.
Other targets are available.
Well, thank you very much, Charles. And thanks also to Nick Carr, the author of The Big Switch, Rewiring the World from Edison to Google, which is available via The Guardian at guardian.co.uk/bookshop. Alrighty, enough about what blows our horns. What is kicking off in your world? Over on the blog, Jack Schofield started a wave of comments asking for your votes on the worst applications on the PC by pulling on the ire of the Download Squad's top five. Personally, I have had absolutely nothing but trouble with Microsoft Access, an overblown, overinflated database program that clogs up the RAM and chugs on the PC. And interestingly enough, Jack came back. Shuffle. I've not seen a copy of MS Access in the shops for a while, but I'll wager that it doesn't say warning. This product is based on 16-year-old technology on the back of the box. Hoots, I say huzzah to that. Jemima, what's your most despised application?
God, they've opened a whole can of worms with this discussion, haven't they? I love it. Well, I do use a Mac. I confess I'm quite careful not to put any programs on my machine that I don't think are half decent, but I'm forced at work to use Lotus Notes, and it's absolutely vile.
Revolting. Pretty much every newspaper group in the UK, in the national newspapers, uses Notes.
Okay. I mean, it's visually ugly, and it's functionally a nightmare. I mean, and if design is about function as well as form... it just fails on every count.
There she goes.
Even little things like the scroll bar thing doesn't work if you've got a scroll mouse. You know, nothing happens. Unlike every other program on the Mac. It's interesting because this was mentioned in the blog comments. And someone said, well, what version of Notes are you using? Version 5? It's a terrible one. And actually, no, I checked before we came in. It's version 6.5. Because like any enterprise, we move fairly slowly and conservative. We don't leap forward in these things. We do it nice.
Well, mine's... nobbled, and I use Apple Mail, and I'm not afraid to say so.
I have to say for myself as well, I consider it a bad day. I consider it a failed day, in fact, if I have to open Notes.
Yes, me too.
Would that be your failed, your down application?
It's not actually. I've got to say the one that bugs me most constantly is Microsoft Word, because for me, I work with a lot with text, obviously, and the thing that Word doesn't have, or it has too much of, is scripting. But Alan Audio in the comments on the blog came up with a description which I thought was just great on this. He said, the prize for the most annoying application has to go to Word. The way it tries to reformat things when it guesses that what you want to do something is irritating in the extreme, and just when it thinks you've turned off all those annoying options, another one pops up. I recently watched somebody trying to place two photos in specific but not overly critical positions within a Word document to create a simple pamphlet. The pictures leapt around all over the place like things possessed every time she changed something, and after a couple of hours she still hadn't got the result she was after.
He could have just been describing my experiences with Word.
I mean, the thing that drives me crazy, for example, is I open a document that someone sent me. Why can't it just always open in the font and text and size and page layout that I wanted to be in?
Yeah, and they will insist on using Times New Roman, for God's sake.
Come on, guys, it's 2008. Yeah. Times New Roman is so 1965.
I just use text edit. There's just too much stuff in Word.
Incredible amount of ire in this studio at the minute. But moving on to the other things that people are talking about. And if people do want
are they talking about other things?
They are.
There's much software to hate out there.
Actually, if you do want to comment on the software that you dislike the most, then you can go to the blogs, blogs.guardian.co.uk/technology. But meanwhile, Jemima, you wrote something about live blogging, and you think that the days of live blogging
are
numbered.
The National Collegiate Athletic Association in the States, back in June, they kicked out somebody that was live blogging one of their events. And basically, they've come up with a whole new set of rules that are just stupidly restrictive. They say that if you are blogging, whether you're a reporter or a blogger or whatever, you can only post 3 times per quarter in American football games.
What?
And 5 times per half in basketball games. It's ridiculous.
I love the idea of how they could have come up with these numbers.
Exactly.
What was the meeting like when they came up with five? Four.
I think possibly just closed their eyes and pointed at the keyboard and just, see what came up. And whilst researching this, I was horrified to see that the International Cricket Council, the ICC, is also looking at banning live blogging. And add to that the fact that conference organisers might eventually twig that some people don't have to go to their conferences when other people blog them minute by minute. And G7 UK made a good comment. How can they restrict somebody who's watching on TV from blogging an event? Where do you draw the line? What about a forum where a number of contributors post updates and the whole thread becomes a complete written record of what's happening?
Clearly, you can see what the NCAA is thinking, is that we have this piece of content and we sell the rights in this form to go there. And what they're saying is, well, when we sell the rights to TV, what we're doing is we're selling the rights to you, the TV viewer, to watch it, not to reuse it in some way. And and it's all, it's rather like the stuff with, you know, CDs and can you transfer it to the iPod? Strictly you can't, but actually you can if you feel like it. It's all these sorts of little
But they're not listening to what people really like about live blog. I mean, the reason
they're
people...
lawyers, why the should
reason,
they listen?
The reason people live blog is because people read live blogs and they like to take part in them. And the reason they like to take part is because they can't interact with the TV. They want to have a say. And there's so much more potential in it. There are already people who've been testing out reporting from NASCAR rallies in the States by using Twitter. There's so much more potential in it that anyone attempting to stifle it is frankly mad.
And that's the bottom line.
Yes.
And meanwhile, over on the Games blog, if I can pull us back to games for a second, Keith has started an absolute storm of excitement with his predictions of the top 20 games that are going to be in the shops in 2008. But what's most intriguing about this is that he's ignored the heavy hitters Grand Theft Auto, Gran Turismo, Metal Gear Solid, and Mario Kart Wii, which everybody is clearly very, very excited about. Anyway, some of the top games which he expects to rock out are Res HD, which I'm very much looking forward to, the next chapter of the phenomenal Advance Wars, and, of course, LEGO Indiana Jones, to follow up on LEGO Star Wars, which is cool. More on that on the blog at blogs.guardian.co.uk/games. And Charles, I think Linux has been lighting up the switchboard on the tech blog as well. What's going on there?
Yeah, Kevin Anderson wrote his experiences after 6 months of using Ubuntu, one of the Linux distributions, which is intended to be the most user-friendly, and says, ready for advanced computer users, but not most mainstream users. Although, you know, from the description that he got, the sort of things he was doing was stuff like changing his graphics card, and then he had problems with the graphics card not being recognized or not being able to change the resolution and so on. It was pointed out that really that's not the sort of thing that most people are going to do. If people are going to install Linux, which actually it'd be simpler just to buy a Dell box that's got, you know, Ubuntu installed, they're probably not going to mess around with the graphics card. And the comment from J.K. Blacker was, maybe my mum's just a freak, but for her basic needs, word processing and internet, she's been able to use my Ubuntu laptop without problems. In fact, she seems to like it more than her Windows laptop.
His mum's a freak? That's not very nice.
No, he said, maybe my mum's just a freak.
Oh, okay.
It's the anonymity of the internet, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, thank you guys very much for all of the blogs and all the blog comments. And if you, of course, would like to comment, then please do come to blogs.guardian.co.uk. And you can. And now, take a trip forward in time with us as we predict what will be in the galaxy of the Guardian over the next couple of weeks. Charles, as the section's editor, you're positioned better than most to tell us what will be in the technology section of the paper on newsstands on Thursday.
Well, the lead article is going to be looking ahead to Apple and Macworld, and I've got a number of people who worked at Apple and who follow Apple very closely to talk about what sort of things they expect to be coming, what they think won't be coming, smartest and dumbest things Apple's done in the past year, and when they think Steve Jobs will leave Apple. And there's some very interesting answers there. We look at Bill Gates's arc of his CES career in terms of how he looks in the pictures and how his speeches are gone. The Frio Data, we're looking at a court case against the Ordnance Survey. Vic Keegan is looking at GPS phones, and we're also looking at a cheap A3 scanner for under £100, which is really pretty cheap for A3. Privacy policies that you find on websites and whether they mean anything. Spacesuits for those intrepid galactic people who are going to be spending a couple of £100,000 just to go up into space, and a new water repellent substance.
Spacesuits sound cool.
Oh, they're going to be featuring in Heat, I bet.
Excellent. Anytime now. And on next week's show, Bobby will be covering what you, dear listener, want him to, plus the rest of the best from CES and the latest from Macworld. Which brings up an important point. Because of Macworld scheduling, next week's Tech Weekly will be published on Wednesday instead of Tuesday, so you can suck on our feed then. Send us an email at tech.guardian.co.uk, that's tech, T-E-C-H, .guardian.co.uk, to let us know what you want him to do, or just to chat and say hello. In the meantime, thank you very much to Jemima, to Charles, to Bobby, to Nick, as well as to Bill Gates for his ever-amusing quotes, his hilarious voice, and of course his predictions. Until next week, and hopefully thereafter, you can find out all the latest from the blogs and the headlines at guardian.co.uk/technology. I'm Alex Kratosky, and thank you very much for listening.
Guardian Unlimited.